wars on the horizon, chaos in the land, sickness spreads like fire, can we stand hand in hand? End of the age as iniquity increase, waiting on Yahusha's kingdom or all wars will cease. Worlds collide, it's that fury, it's that rage. The system's crumbling, we'll shatter in your cage. From the ashes we rise, this is more than just a phase. Channels of justice ignite to blaze new ways.
In this storm, we scream for salvation. Yahusha's kingdom comes, our final liberation.
Welcome back to another episode of Exiled Strangers. Glad to have you guys. Remember, we do testimonies on here, and if you want to give your testimony, then email us at exiledstrangers@proton.me. exiledstrangers@proton.me. Today's going to be a pretty interesting episode, and it's something that's in the back of everybody's minds right now, and that is talking about preparedness. But before we do that, how are you doing, nobody?
Hey, I'm doing good, man, and hello to all you outcasts of society out there. It is a interesting thing to walk in the ways of being set apart to the Father and his ways, but you got a home here, because we're all weirdos in the eyes of the secular nations.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely some weirdos.
in a fun way, you know, in a fun way.
It depends on which podcast episode you listen to. Okay. Some people might listen to it and be immediately offended. But
you can't take away my Christmas.
We're winters.
Yeah.
Like, dude, just okay, for those of you guys that haven't listened to the episode yet, go back and check the Christmas and Hanukkah episode that we did. It's like the Christmas episode, once we pull up like those what are they? Not hieroglyphs, but the reliefs. It's just blatantly obvious that this is a tradition that's been going on for a very long time, has changed very little, just put new names on it.
I got a text.
Today's...
My bad. Hey, I got a text right after to someone I love very, very much. Oh. And I know they love me too, but they're like, oh, you Grinch. And I was like, yeah, you better believe it. You
know? Yeah, who would have thought the Grinch was a good guy?
Yeah.
And how the Grinch stole Christmas. Oh, man. But today's episode is going to be talking about preparedness with everything going crazy in the world. Trump is trying to buy Greenland. We got California on fire right now, and Texas is supposedly getting a bunch of snow. So things feels like everything's back. Oh, and Alaska is like warmer than it is in Texas right now. So everything's flip-flop. Everything's backwards. Things are getting crazy. And today we're going to give you guys, if you aren't of the preparedness mindset, we're going to give you guys scripture and reasons why you should think about preparedness. We're going to talk about things that we think you should prepare for, or like what you should acquire to be prepared. We're going to do a little pocket dump. And we're going to take some like recent experience that we had in North Carolina with the disaster relief there and tell you guys what we learned from, hands-on experience, boots on the ground experience up in a disaster zone.
Yeah.
So, nobody, I know you wanted to start off with some scripture. What you got?
Yeah, so look.
So Proverbs first?
Yeah, we'll jump into Proverbs. We're just going to, dip our toes into some scripture, because we could spend all day looking at instructions, and it is most definitely worthwhile. We just, for the sake of time, I just got a few to kind of get our lenses on right as we go forward, and having the right heart posture, especially when it comes towards planning your defensive measures. And notice I said defensive and not offensive. But we'll get into that in a little bit.
Oh, you mean we won't be doing any looting or anything like that? No marauding or anything?
Yeah, I don't think so, man. Yeah, don't be a turd.
Yeah, and hey, heads up, y'all. If you're a part of a mutual assistance group or something, and there's somebody within that group whose idea it is to their form of preparedness is, oh, well, I got guns, I'll just go take it from whoever has something. Kick them out immediately.
Yeah, they're going to be looking at you first.
Absolutely. You're going to be the easiest target first, because they know what you got. They know where you live. They have all the intel on you. So, not somebody you want in your group.
Yeah, that's just a negative person,
Yeah.
The idea too behind all this is like, how can you help the strangers that are in need? Because if we do that, I have all the faith in the world the Father will multiply what is there so that we are taken care of as well. Like, there's a responsibility across the board to still walk in His ways and show the light that is shining forth from the Father through the Messiah, our high priest, and now through us because we are being obedient, walking in their ways. So anyway, all right, we got a little bit of Proverbs here. I love this one, right? And this is just kind of like to get us, to get us in that right mindset. Proverbs 6, starting at verse 6, it says, I'm going to read this out of the Septuagint because it's pretty good here. But it says, go to the ant, O sluggard, and see, and emulate his ways, and become wiser than he. For whereas he has no husbandry, nor anyone to compel him, and is under no master, he prepares food for himself in the summer and lays by abundant store in harvest. And go to the bee and learn how diligent she is and how earnestly she is engaged in her work, whose labors kings and private men use for health, and she is desired and respected by all. Though weak in body, she is advanced by honoring wisdom. And that's pretty interesting, right? Like, this whole second part about the bee, by the way, is not in the Masoretic text. They completely cut that out.
Really?
But if you look at this, like, the ant works and is constantly at work, always preparing for the struggles ahead so that the struggles don't come upon them. You know, it's always preparation for that next stage, as well as the bee, like, using wisdom to work diligently and precisely to make this, you know, make some honey. But it's just a lot we can learn from nature and how they obey the ordinances that were prepared for them from the Father. And, you know, Proverbs here is telling us, like, hey, just check this out. Maybe you should, you know, get your butts in gear a little bit and, you know, start getting your act together.
Yeah. And I mean, you'd never see a lazy ant and you never see a lazy bee. That's for sure. They're constantly working, and
it's pretty cool.
That B one, I'm gonna have to dive back into and read that again because that is really good. Yeah, and also speaking of preparedness, bees are an awesome preparedness tool that everybody should try to acquire. That's free. That's carbohydrates that don't go bad, honey. Mm. And, like, it's something that doesn't require any inputs from you. All you have to do is go, like, maintain the area around the bees and then go steal their honey every once in a while, and then you're good. There's a lot of beekeepers who make it way more complicated than that. But from a very simplistic point of view, bees are very, very low maintenance. Very low maintenance, and they produce a lot of freaking honey. If you have access to the proper conditions and stuff, which most people do, unless you live in like a high desert, high altitude desert, then yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's awesome.
Isn't it cool? Like, this, I love, like, seeing scripture realized in the world around us. It's just exciting, you know?
Yeah, for sure. What else you got?
Yeah. So jumping over to Proverbs 16. I'll just start at verse 2. It says, all the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but Yahweh weighs the spirits. Commit your works to Yahweh, and your plans shall be established. Yahweh has made all for his purpose, and also the wrong for the day of evil. Everyone proud in heart is an abomination to Yahweh. And then it says, hand to hand, he goes not unpunished. Interesting thing, though. I think you're like, what does that mean? Hand to hand, he goes not unpunished. On the Septuagint, it says here, it says, everyone that is proud in heart is unclean before Elohim, and he that unjustly strikes hands with hand shall not be held guiltless. That's going to tie into what we're talking about today in a major way. Who unjustly strikes hands with hand. These references to hand here in the Greek is chair, C-H-E-I-R. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But it could mean an instrument or an instrument of the hand or grasping, like an action of the hand. So an unjustly strike with that won't be held guiltless, right? So we have to really weigh in our actions going forward into these times where there's a high likelihood that we will encounter situations that we will have to take action in. Yeah.
So don't go around pimp slapping people either.
Yeah. That probably wouldn't turn out too good. You know,
nope, not going to turn out very good.
All right. Then I'm jumping over to Proverbs 22 verse 3. We have the Masoretic and the Septuagint saying some different things here. So the Masoretic says a clever one foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple go on and are punished. Now, this is in reference to preparation, right? I definitely take this in reference to preparation. The interesting thing is that the Septuagint says an intelligent man seeing a bad man severely punished is himself instructed, but fools pass by and are punished. Now, this takes on a different light. Like, we see evil abounding all around us. And if we are to act in intelligence and use wisdom given by the Father, we see this. We see that, like, very clearly the rewards for acting in evil, perverse ways. And this is both a safeguarding and on the way the Masoretic tends to describe this passage. It's also you foresee evil, you hide yourself, you make preparation. So both preparations of the heart in order to, you know, go on walking in an upright way. And also I think in physical preparations, like the body still has to be sustained while we are here walking this walk.
Yeah. But I mean, you could also take that in another way. Like, if you observe, like, in a more worldly way, if you observe an area go through some catastrophic natural or unnatural disaster, and you don't think, like, oh, that should be a hint to go ahead and prepare for something like that. Let me take what I learned from what happened over there and apply it to my own life and let me prepare for similar circumstances. It seems like it could apply that way as well.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah. And I think when we get into talking about North Carolina, that's going to be very apparent. Like, the lessons learned there, not only for those in those communities, but for the people who actually went and witnessed and then are sharing it now, you know, like, I can say for sure my perspective on things has changed quite a bit since, you know, being in the midst of all that destruction.
Absolutely. Did you have any more scripture? Did you want to get into North Carolina?
Yeah, let me just get through. I'm going to read a couple more real quick.
Okay.
And then we can get into it. So 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13, it says, therefore, having girded up the loins of your mind, being sober, set your expectation perfectly upon the favor that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Yahushua the Messiah. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts in your ignorance. Instead, as the one who called you is set apart, so you also should become set apart in all behavior. Because it is written, be set apart, for I am set apart. And again, all this ties into the greater sum of instructions that we have in the Torah, from the prophets. I look at it all like Torah. It's all instruction, but you know, you have the Torah, the prophets, and the light that the Messiah shined on it, showing us how to walk in it with an upright heart. Yeah, it, you know, anyways, I don't want to beat that one to death, but last one I want to read here is Luke 22, starting at verse 35. So this is right after he tells Peter, like, you're going to deny me three times. And then he goes on to say this in verse 35. So this is right after the supper before Yahushua is taken. In 35, he says, and he said to them, When I sent you out without purse and bag and sandals, did you lack anything? And they said, none at all. And he said to them, but now let him who has a purse take it, and likewise also a bag. And let him who has no sword sell his garment and buy one. For I say to you that what has been written has yet to be accomplished in me, as he was reckoned with the lawless one. So he's quoting Isaiah 53 there. It says, for that which refers to me has an end too. So, I'll finish it off here. And they said, Master, look, here are two swords. But he said to them, that is enough. So he's literally saying, like, while the master was here, it's the same principle, like why the disciples weren't fasting while the master was with them, while Yahushua was with them, because there will be a need for fasting once the master leaves, you know, once he ascended to the heavenly tabernacle, there's the time. Same way, they're provided for. They saw this pure protection that came from the Father through the Son to the disciples as they went out. But now he's saying this time for this season is coming to an end. And now he says, arm yourselves for defense. You know, this is, people could say the sword, he's talking about the word. And sure, absolutely, you need to be prepared with the word as your sword first and foremost. But in this situation here, it is certainly talking about actual swords. I mean, there is the word here is makira, which is a knife. That is a dirk, figuratively war, judicial punishment, or the sword. A large knife used for killing animals and cutting up flesh. So I could keep going on and on, but this is a literal knife. Yeah. So that being said, there's this element of us needing to be prepared and then knowing how to walk upright with that preparation so as not to use it for unrighteous gain, for murder, for anything like that. Like, there are a lot of instructions we need to really embody. But yeah.
I think the emphasis on the sword part, like, it, you wouldn't have to sell your garments in order to acquire the word. You would have to, you know, sell your garments, your cloak, to acquire a sword. Like, that statement right there, the whole sentence there, I think gives away the fact that it is a literal, quite literal sword. Like, go get a sword to defend yourselves with.
And how interesting that, like, he tells them to sell your garment and buy one. Like, that's, you know, garments are important. And he's not saying buy a sword and run around naked. Like, no, don't go streaking with a sword. You're going to get in trouble. Like, the master is not saying that. But what he's saying is, like, this garments, which are typically expensive back in these days, they didn't have many to the ownership of each person. But he's saying it is important enough that you should go sell one of your garments to buy one of these.
Absolutely.
And then just to look at preparation in general, let's take a look at, like, Joseph. When he went into Egypt, Yah placed him there. The Father placed him there in order to make preparation. So, like, the idea of physical preparation is not, it is scriptural. It's not a bad thing. So long as that doesn't supersede your faith and you're following Yah and relying on him, because he will provoke us to prepare. He will show us how much is enough as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it seems like the common argument you hear from Christians about preparedness and not preparing is that, oh, I don't need to prepare. Jesus will take care of me. Oh, if it's my time to die, then I'll go to heaven and stuff like that. And it's like, there are things, or like, if it's the tribulations, then I'll just get raptured up out of here. There are things other than the tribulations to prepare for, like, ignoring the whole argument of that doctrine or anything like that. But there are other things that you can prepare for. The world is getting crazier and crazier. There's natural disasters you can prepare for. Ask California. Ask North Carolina. Ask the next state in about a couple of weeks. I'm sure something else will pop up. But, yeah, there are other things that you can prepare for that aren't necessarily the end of the world.
Sure, sure. But
Look at what if you have an apartment in Colorado, like Aurora, Colorado?
Yeah,
and
bro.
Then you have Venezuelan gangs coming in trying to take over the apartment. You can prepare for something like that.
Yeah, you could put a giant boxing glove on the end of a huge spring so when they open the door, socks them in the face. <You know? laughs> Is that what you're thinking?
Okay.
Yeah.
Not quite, yeah. But now
all
it
right.
is.
All right.
Now okay. That sounds like a game plan.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I like my preparations to work and also be funny. You know, we need to have a sense of humor getting through these times.
All of my defensive measures were inspired by Looney Tunes. Oh, man. Specifically, Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now I have to readdress all my preps, man. You just gave away my stuff here.
Oh, man. But I knew a guy out in North Carolina. He was actually in Asheville. And he had actually intentionally prepared. Like, okay, he lived in a community, and he tried to convince his community forever to prepare and stuff like that. And then all of them thought he was crazy, thought he was some doomsday prepper and stuff like that. And like the hurricane hit, and then he ended up feeding the entire community because of his preps, the stuff that he put back. He ended up keeping everybody fed for the first couple of weeks whenever they weren't getting any help or attention. And now it seems like he converted everybody in his community to now be preppers, to now not preppers, but at least put something back. But I think, like, he kind of changed my mind. That example kind of changed my mind on preparing with the idea of other people. Like,
yeah,
because everybody thinks, let's say you have a wife and you have like two kids or something. You're thinking, okay, I'm going to prepare for me, my wife, and my two kids. That's what I'm preparing for. Maybe put some extra back for just goodwill in the community. To like, maybe the idea is like, okay, I'm gonna feed the community because I know my community isn't preparing, and some event could be the conversion that they need to start preparing.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about it like this, like, let's say that, you know, whatever event happens, this major event that affects society in general, right? It affects supply chain, all that, which is actually like pretty probable in the days ahead.
Yeah.
But let's say this happens and people are hungry, for instance, and you have a person or multiple people, like a family, they come by your house, right? I'm not saying to not take precautions because you don't know who might mean to harm you. But if exactly. I'm looking at the examples from the patriarchs, from, you know, just the Torah, just scripture in general, like, I am going to emulate that right behavior and I'm going to offer them food. Like, this is, it doesn't need to be, you know, hey, come in, take all my preps. I'm going to go ahead and leave now and be a wanderer. No, not like that. But yeah. It's like, you know, you can set them up a little bit and show them the love of the Father, share some truth with them, and they could be about their way, or who knows, maybe they'd be great and they join your little clique, you know. But I do trust the Father will replenish whatever we're giving in order to follow his ways.
And it's not necessarily wrong to test them before giving them preps as well, as Joseph did his brothers. He tested them first and then revealed his identity and everything, and then welcomed them into his home and all that type of stuff. You can put them through some sort of test first. I mean, that test could be like strip search to make sure they ain't got any weapons on them.
Yeah, gender the appropriate test could be... strip search. Okay. You better have a male exactly. and female representative there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get. I can see where that's going. Yeah, don't get carried away or anything like that. Yeah. Like,
in fact, just buy yourself a metal detecting wand. Okay, just like, hey, you know what? Hey, we're gonna back off of this topic real quick.
Yeah, get you one of those TSA scanners, those naked body scanners,
bro. Why back to the naked body scanner? That's like, you know, that's defeating the purpose. Look, I got one of those little metal detecting wands. I do. It's do pretty you? Cool. Yeah. I forget where I picked it up at. But yeah, I got
one. Reminds me of that scene in The Office where Jim sends Dwight that metal detector and calls it the Gaydar. And then he accidentally wands his belt and it goes off and Dwight is just looking around. Oh, man. But yes, if you are going to help anybody, you're well within your rights and it's well reasoned to put these people through a test first or have very strict rules that they have to follow in order to receive something. I mean, cause you can't help somebody at the detriment of like harming who you did prepare for.
Sure.
And I mean, one thing that I have to check in myself is that, hey, like these people had the same access to information that I did.
Sure.
Why didn't they prepare? Like why didn't you, like, now the event has happened, now you're worried about preparedness and you want something that I put back for my family. I mean, it's something that I have to check in myself, and it honestly is a root of I think it's just rooted in just a lack of trust that Yahuwah will, you know, protect us and keep us safe and stuff like that, which is something that I definitely have to check in myself. But
you're not alone.
There
though.
Is that element.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a common feeling. Like, hey, you had the same access to the information I had. I've been telling y'all forever that you need to prepare, which is the same point of view that the guy up in North Carolina could have taken. Was like, hey, I've tried to convince you guys for years that you need to prepare, and you all thought I was crazy. I'm not giving you guys any kind of food. And then he'd have a bunch of dead neighbors. But instead, he made converts out of them. And now the community is preparing.
Yeah. And I think that's, okay, that's a great example, right? Like, we know our Father's merciful. Like, how many times, you know, and everybody can search their hearts right when I say this. I'm searching my own and I can count many. How many times have I turned my back on the Father, on his ways in my life prior to this walk where I've been, you know, like, nope, not going to do that. Not going to do this, you know, and yet he's still like drawing me in. He's like, no, please, you know, like, I love you. I'll forgive you. Yeah. Just come on. And I agree. Like, it is frustrating because we go around and you'll talk to family members, friends, and you'll be like, look, here's all of these signs of what potentially could happen, what's probable to happen, and anything. Anyways, they won't listen, you know, or they'll be like, you know, you're crazy. Or one of the most common ones that you mentioned was like, oh, don't worry, the rapture is going to take us out of here. Well, newsflash, the rapture doctrine ain't what you've been taught. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
Seems like the
whole episode dedicated to that. But
okay, so before the episode, start looking up the Lotus Club and C.I. Schofield. Check those guys out.
Yeah,
it's not, and it'll make more sense in the future episode. No, it's not. No, but so as far as preparedness categories or items, what are some things that you think people, okay, based on our experience in North Carolina, what did it seem like everybody seemed to be lacking, and what was something that everybody seemed to have?
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we have to look at this in terms of what time, what stage were they at after the initial hurricane, right? Like, so right after.
Yeah.
You know, your basic things like water, you know, some shelter, even because many people lost their whole homes, food, but you can go a while without food, you know, but food is still, it's still important. And at that time, temperature wasn't horrible there. It was pretty nice out. So that being said, if disaster strikes in winter, like right now, it's pretty darn cold outside. So you got to consider a lot of these different avenues, but I guess initial life sustaining things. And I would also include in that category, self-defense tools. Because yeah. society does break down rather quickly in these kind of events. And I think if this, what happened in North Carolina, if that happened in, you know, well, actually we're fixing to find out what happens in California with the fires, but we're already seeing yeah. crazy looting. And I just saw a report of, like, I don't know if it's true or not yet, so it's unconfirmed, but excuse me, of like some masked dudes that are starting more fires in places. And I'm like, oh, great. You know,
oh my goodness.
but if looking at Helene and what it did, if that happened into a different area, I would say that their social decay would happen much quicker. What saved yep. those people and the majority is, like, these people are awesome up there. Like, they're very self-reliant. And
sense of yeah. community. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, like,
most
huge
people
factor.
Knew each other.
Yeah.
And that's something that that stuck out to me. There were two main things that stuck out to me. A, nobody had near enough fuel. And I don't know that you could really even stockpile enough fuel for what had happened up there. But that was one thing that stuck out, was like, nobody had enough fuel. Everybody was out of fuel pretty quickly. The other thing that stuck out to me was the community aspect. Because before that event, I always thought, it was like, man, I don't know that I really want to partner up with anybody. It just doesn't seem like a good way to go. But the main reason a lot of these people made it was because they did have that sense of community, because they knew their neighbors' names and all that type of stuff. That really stuck out. But talking about that disaster happening somewhere else, there was that one guy we met who had the footage that he was in his trailer, had the footage of that flood coming at him. He and I were discussing, and he's from Philly. He and I were discussing this very topic, like, man, this had happened in Philly. He was saying if this had happened in Philly, like, there'd be looting, there'd be murders, there'd be all kinds of stuff. But he was thankful, super thankful that he was in that location for that disaster.
You know what?
Where there is that sense of community.
Yeah. And side note, the last time I was out there in that area, I stopped in and talked with him, and he came right out when he saw me, and he's just like, oh man, he kind of put his head down, and he gave me the biggest hug. And I was like, dude, I'm so happy to see you. Like, he still got the greatest attitude. Anyways,
that dude, he's happy as could be, like, all the time. And a lot of people were, lot of people were just thankful they didn't have to go to any funerals, but
sure,
that's a little off the topic. That's more about North Carolina specifically than preparedness. But
but still a lot of lessons learned, like communication was a huge one that was down, you know, like, there is a real value in learning and knowing how to operate a ham radio, and those can go down as well. Sure. But it's a good, probability that you would have them, I suppose.
There was that one community, Little Germany. The only reason they ended up getting help or getting any kind of attention was because they had that one ham radio operator in the community.
Sure.
That was the only reason that they received any kind of help, because their only access to the outside world was washed down the river. And they were completely cut off. And
I'm sorry. I got excited. That was my fault. My bad, bro. My bad. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Their only access got cut off. Now, there's a lot of other crazy things going on with that community, Little Germany.
But
if it wasn't for that one ham radio operator, there'd be a lot more people that passed away in that little community.
Sure. I was just going to bring up, our radio guy that we had with us. We had a comic guy with us. Bro, you know who you are. All right. You know who you are.
Yep.
And we love you. And he made this antenna, this huge freaking antenna out of, like, an ammo can and some PVC pipe and all this stuff. And I'm like, it got us connected over the radio at places that nobody else could. And I was just like, dude, that is the winning attitude.
Yeah.
He's being innovative. He's going out of his way to try and test things. And he had done this before this event. It wasn't during, like, this is the mindset that we have to have going into it. Like, hey, let me see if this will work. Let me go in my backyard and try to start a fire this way. Let me, you know, I don't know, whatever the topic is, but that came in clutch, man. That was awesome.
It did. Yeah. That cantenna, he called it the cantenna, and that thing reached what, like 15 feet up in the air, dude. Okay. The area we were in is right next to the tallest peak east of the Mississippi. So that's what that should give you a visual of, like, or an idea of how tall these mountains are. Like, the tallest peak of east of the Mississippi is called Mount Mitchell, and we were only like 15-ish miles away from it. So we're in a pretty tall mountainous region of the Appalachian Mountains. And he was able to connect back to home base, which was like not even in the same state.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. Like, it was just awesome. That guy, you know, hey, when you're listening, brother, if you hear us talking about you, it was a real pleasure to be out there with you, man. It was great.
Yes, it was. And also another important thing to take note of with him is that was not the first disaster he had been through. He had been through Katrina as well.
Yeah.
So he already had like an example of what, like, of a natural disaster to prepare for and stuff like that. Now a lot of people tend to compare disasters and like, oh, well, this one was worse or this one was worse. They're all disasters, but they're all different kinds of disasters. For example, Katrina, very flat lowland. Like, it's all flat over there in Louisiana. Up here, it's a different disaster because the flooding gets funneled through these valleys, and the water was way more violent for this one. So still a hurricane, still flooding, but the landscape dictated how the water was going to react once it hit the ground. Both completely manufactured storms too, and directed. Let's not ignore that part. So take your geography into account whenever you're preparing for this. Like, okay, do I live in the mountains? Is there a chance that this valley becomes just one fast moving body of water? Am I in the flatlands with sandy soil? Is like the water going to hit the ground and dissipate after a couple of days? These are all things to kind of take into account whenever you're thinking of your plan once disaster hits. And then also take into account, like, what's the most likely disaster to occur in your area?
Sure.
Like, if you're okay, if you're in that same part in North Carolina, a wildfire is pretty low on the list as far as natural disasters go, because it is a temperate rainforest. But if you live somewhere in California, hurricanes, I would say, are less likely than wildfires. There's a wildfire in California every doggone year. So what's your game plan whenever you know which way the predominant winds blow? So if there's a fire between you and the predominant winds, what's your game plan in that scenario? And then practice your game plans beforehand. Like, when the disaster hits is not the time to practice like your game plan or practice certain skills that you haven't tried out before. Like, the practice comes beforehand. Let's say you have a generator. Run your generator before you need your generator to make sure your generator works and that you know how to use it. Just stuff like that.
That being said, like, I got a nice Jenny, right? And I know it runs good, but I still have some starter fluid on the side in case it gives me trouble. You know, like, a few extra things here and there just to have on hand. And it's not necessarily stuff you travel with either. Like, I say, if you set your preparation goal at the worst case scenario, which I think in a general sense, the worst case scenario would be that all hell is broken loose where you are at and where you have prepared at, and you therefore need to exfil and leave. And you don't know, you know, it's a coin toss beyond that. But having to exfil and leave, let's say taking only what you can carry on your back, is the worst case scenario. So plan to that. And then everything else you will have, potentially, you should have a route to go in order to address each situation. And it's not going to be perfect, right? Like, so, like, in Afghanistan, like, there is always a plan, right? But the second you know, something would blow up, something would go pop or zing or zip, the plan goes out the window and you're just addressing that situation in front of you. You know, everything becomes fluid. You know, it's, you have a plan to go drive to the mall. Well, if you see a car wreck in front of you and someone's hurt, guess what? Now you're just addressing that specific situation that you weren't intending to come across.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, yeah. And who knows? And,
okay.
What's
so another
us.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. Who it's difficult to predict, but you can kind of try to narrow it down and get like,
well, let's hold on a second. Okay. Hold on. So, we got Congress talking about ET coming over here. We got all these orbs. We got volcano stuff that, like, they're saying, oh, Yellowstone's shaking. We got tsunami warnings. We got nuke warnings. And, like, name it. We got probably they're going to come out with flying monkeys with laser guns soon. Like, who knows what's coming our way? It's going to get weird, guys.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Now, okay, so if you prepare for a EMP blast,
sure,
then you're kind of preparing for everything.
Yeah.
If you prepare for that, then it covers the bases for quite a few things, whether it's like a nuclear, like a high atmosphere nuclear warhead that produces the EMP blast, or if it's like a solar mass ejection that produces a EMP blast, whatever the case may be. If you prepare for that, then you're covering a lot of bases all at once. Yeah, so yeah, there's that. But with your bug out plan, like whenever you're trying to leave your area, try to set up now like a place you can go to. Like, okay, in North Carolina, people's homes got wiped out. They can't stay. And let's say all your preps are in that home. Maybe have multiple locations where you have preps in different areas. Like there's a family I know in North Carolina that had two locations for their preps. One was at their house, and one was actually at a storage container a town over. Their preps in that storage container are gone. Like, they got completely wiped out, but the preps in their house are perfectly fine. So, like, two is one is none, that whole... I know you love sayings like that, dude. But,
yeah. I just...
It really applies when it comes to preparedness.
I mean, it's true. It's just, you know, so I think I'm just like kind of salty a little bit. So when there's like some military phrasing that's popped around, I'm like, oh, just say have a bunch of it. You know, get a bunch of it.
I thought that was Boy Scouts.
I don't know. I wasn't a Boy Scout, man. I never did that.
Neither was I.
Well, all right. So never mind. Excuse me. but no, they do say that. Anyways.
Yeah. But try to think of multiple locations to store your preparations at, and try to figure out now where you can bug out to if you have to. Because there's people in North Carolina right now living in tents because they didn't have an alternative. And some of you guys listening might just legitimately not have an alternative.
Sure.
And in that case, maybe like, okay, prepare a tent. Go to a national park. You can do that. There's a bunch of feral people out there try to avoid the feral people, but yeah, that's an option. You can go out there and stay in a national park, learn some bushcraft skills. Figure out some wild foraging, learn how to use a bow and arrow and go hunt some game. Those are all options.
But then when it gets into clean eating, man, like, okay, so things get limited, you know, and this is another topic that I'm sure we'll hit once we start having some more episodes getting into the details of our father's instructions. But like, before in this walk, I'd be like, yeah, go shoot you a squirrel or like a rabbit or something. And it's like, uh-oh, now we can't eat these. So what do we do? And, you know, the only place I've come to is like, look, know what's clean and unclean. And I trust the Father. If I'm hungry and we're in like the consummation of times and some crazy, you know, fleeing from one city to the next, I trust the Father's going to put this beautiful buck right in front of me that we're going to have some venison, you know, like.
Yeah.
Something he's going to provide.
Don't discount wild foraging, like especially where we are in the United States. I know a guy he lived in Tennessee, and he was going, him and his buddy were going to, like, for some 2 or 3 week, like, camp out trip in Colorado, right? On the way out to Colorado, they stopped in about Middle Tennessee, and they stopped off in, like, in the national park, and they stayed in this national park for 11 days, and they didn't drop a pound. And this was actually, like, coming out of winter, going into spring. They didn't drop a pound, and they didn't use a single piece of their food preps or their food stock for that camping trip. They did 100% wild foraging the entire time. There's an old saying when it came to, like, I'm using the term shaman, but that's not really what their role was. Their role was more like your tribal healer type thing. Like, he was your doctor, that type of thing. But there used to be a test before they could become a healer. There was a test that they had to go out in the wilderness for a year, and they had to bring back a plant that they could not find a use for. That was like a useless plant. And the test was, if they came back with anything, then they failed. Like, because every single plant has some medicinal, some edible, some sort of use. So just try it. And you don't have to learn everything. You don't have to learn everything at all. If you got like 10 wild edibles just locked away in your brain, and you're like, I know what this is. I know this is dandelion. I know this is stinging nettle. I know such and such. Like, just get 10 of them locked away in your brain, get super familiar with them, and you should be pretty good. Cool thing about the plants in North America is that there's only like 4 of them that'll kill you, and they all require processing. The rest are either not very palatable or they're edible. Mushrooms, on the other hand, like, flip the statistics. There's way more than 4 that you can eat, but there's a whole lot of them that look like the edible ones that can kill you. So don't get too crazy with the mushrooms or the wild edibles on mushrooms. Stick to the plants, and then have some teacher walk with you and do the mushrooms. Like, don't do it from a book. Don't learn from I've actually used a mushroom identification app on mushrooms that I knew, like, what they were, and it gave me wrong answers 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, so you don't want to be surviving, and then all of a sudden you're running from a pink elephant with butterfly wings. You know what I mean? Like,
and poop in your pants.
That's not, you know.
It's amazing how common of a side effect that is.
Hey, let me pause real quick. I just got another notification about those fires in California, and this leads into what we were talking about, okay. Communications. It says the fire in Los Angeles County has caused significant damage to the critical communications infrastructure at Mount Wilson, a hub for broadcasting and telecommunications. It's the home to numerous radio, television, and emergency comms towers that serve millions across SoCal. Quite potentially, this could be like a repeater site for ham radios up there. I would venture to guess there's a tower up there for that, or multiple.
Wow.
So look, there's a potential that, like, you know, your stuff really fails, and it's like, okay, what now? What, you know? Yeah, I just wanted
That's
to
a good
it
point.
Popped up at a pretty appropriate time. So,
yeah, man. So the topic is preparedness, and preparedness could be something for, like, natural disasters or, like, life-changing events and stuff like that. But preparedness also goes into, like, the day-to-day. Like, are you prepared for the day, every single day? And that kind of leads into, like, your EDC. Now, we've mentioned before, we plan on doing, like, EDC pocket fixed blades and stuff like that. For a bunch of different reasons, sticking to the pocket fixed blade. But it goes into that. I would like to expand that into overall EDC equipment. I haven't really discussed it much with nobody, but that would be something that I would like to do is, like,
I'm down. That's it. That's all you need to discuss with me. Yep. I'm game.
All right. There we go. So we've done this before on an episode, but now we're going to do a pocket dump. Stuff that we in general carry most days. Now, like, my pocket dump that I'm going to show you guys, it's generally the same every day. In fact, I'm not looking at anything that on here that I don't carry every day. So I would recommend getting a good belt.
Yeah.
Get a good sturdy belt. I use that one G-Force. Is it G-Force belt?
Oh, oh,
it's like magnetic.
I don't know what belt you wear, bro. Sorry.
Dang. You're not paying attention, bro?
I thought
we're buddies, dude.
I ain't looking at you.
Why don't you know what belt I wear, man?
Around places.
But it's like a stretchy belt. It has like the magnetic clasps and stuff like that. It's a super comfortable belt, and unlike leather belts, it doesn't warp on you. Like I always have, like anytime I wear a leather belt, it always warps on me, and then it just becomes like a pain and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
You can go first, but let me just hit it. Oh, excuse me. Let me hit on the belts real quick. I used to love leather belts, but now I pretty much just run a Riggers belt. So you got a pretty heavy duty like clasp that you feed the belt through, and then it seats on Velcro so it won't loosen on you. And then also has an attachment so you could drop like a D-ring, and I don't know, if you're brave enough, you can even hook a rope to that if need be in a worst case scenario. Drop a D-ring and a rope if you want to attach someone's kit, and you could potentially drag them out a little easier out of a bad situation. I mean, it's just versatile, but mainly I use them because they hold my pants up and they don't loosen on me. But yeah, I was telling my partner here, and okay, let me just sell myself out in front of the world here. I need to start working out again, man. Like, I've lost my butt. So I need to, you know, like, I need to start doing some squats, some rucking. That's why I got to tighten that belt up so I don't sag.
Nobody's got to get that ghetto booty back, keep his pants up.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Go get some butt plastic surgery just to, so I'm not sagging around.
Oh man, nobody's gonna be standing up for the next podcast because he's got that BBL.
So I think maybe I'll go the route of, like, you know, squats or something, but
there
to be
go.
Determined.
That's probably safer.
I'll let everybody know updates. All right.
Oh, please don't let me know. I don't want to know. If you get a Brazilian butt lift, dude, I don't want to know.
That's one of my preps, dude. It's one of my preps.
Oh, man.
No, I'm just kidding, everybody. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that.
All right. Oh, okay. So I don't know why that in particular made me think of this, but something that a skill that I think that everybody should start at least paying attention to is tactical fasting. Okay. So there's this show on Netflix called Alone, and not the season that's out right now, but the season before that, the guy who won fasted for the last like a third of the time he was out there.
Dang.
He just got used to fasting, and all he was doing was like laying. It was started snowing out there. They were up in like British Columbia or somewhere around there, like Grizzly Island, something like that. And he got a bunch of food dried and stored away. He did that for the first section. He got a bunch of water squared away, got his shelter squared away. And then once it started snowing, once it started getting cold and crappy out all day, all he did was just lay in his little shelter and sleep and drink water. And like, that was it. He just did tactical fasting. And he actually put on weight ahead of time for that challenge, so he had like the fat reserves. That's what triggered it, the BBL and the fat reserves.
I get it. Yeah, I get it.
And he just lived off his fat reserves and just fasted. Now, if you're planning to go that route, you're like, all right, I can fast during the time of disaster. I would practice beforehand. I would give it a shot beforehand, and yeah, think of like your electrolytes and salts, because that makes fasting way, way easier. But, tactical fasting.
That's a good point.
Wide a while without eating food.
Yeah, I would say don't prepare though by getting all fat before something happens, because like that might hinder you. You know, when something happens, you gotta like you might have to hop a fence or two, really, you know, like something like that. There is a thing, like, so as far as like soldiers go and stuff, fit soldiers sustain less injuries on the battlefield. It's just, you know, it's just the truth of the matter, you know, higher muscle densities and better health, you will sustain less damage as somebody else getting the same wound if they're extremely unfit and don't have that muscle density.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not saying bullets are going to bounce off your pecs, you know, but I'm just saying, like, you know, it'll hold together a little better. But
you might as well try.
Yeah, that's what my butt implants will be. It'll be some AR-500 plates. You can't be bulletproof, but.
Oh, man. Okay, so what you got in your pockets, nobody?
Well, so like always, carrying my Glock 43X. I do love this pistol. Extra magazine, sometimes two, depending on where I'm at, but I always have a second or third extra mag, like in my vehicle or pack, but at least one extra magazine on my person. I have a one of those... I think they're meant for EDC, but it's kind of like a smaller frame tourniquet, but it's still the same strength and functionality as a regular cat tourniquet. And then nicotine source, shout out to Dr. Artis.
Yep.
You know,
the other N word. Yeah. That's a documentary. Check out his documentary, The Other N Word. And where he talks about nicotine and all that.
Yeah. It's amazing. Really is. Then I got a wallet, you know, always have a little bit of cash on me, you know, cash is good to have on hand. But blade wise, you got a little Benchmade, shootout. Thank you, brother, for my gift. And, little fixed blade. This one's a Ontario, the Rat 3. I really like this blade. I've had it for a while, but
you know, that new Kaiser Beaver, it reminds me of the Rat 3. I don't know if we talked about that yet or not, but it reminded me of that Rat 3. Like, it's just a beefy, good, sturdy, fixed blade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so, and then hold on. I always got a phone too, right? But with that, like in my pack or in my truck, I do have a Faraday bag. Specifically for just my phone alone. So if I want to drop it in there and, you know, prying ears so they're not listening to me.
That's a good idea. So what holster do you use for your Glock?
Bro, like I've checked out a bunch and honestly, like I use the Safari Land in the waistband.
Uh-huh.
They're cheap. It's $30. They're durable. I broke one on our first trip to North Carolina, and it was, even though I broke part of it, it was still hanging on and usable. It just wasn't ideal, you know? I went and replaced it, and I remember the moment that I broke it too, because I forget exactly what I was doing, but it hung up on something and it kind of messed the clip up a little bit. But yeah, no, it's good. I know there's some great ones out there. I just like this for the area that I carry in. It sits well. So.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, over here, I got the Glock 19 with the fat tack holster. And if anybody doesn't know, like it's a couple of good old Tennessee boys that made this company called Fat Tack Holster. Once you see the guys, you understand the name. Some just corn-fed hillbillies made these holsters, and they are super, super comfortable. We're not sponsored by them by any means. I mean, y'all know we don't have any sponsors yet. But, Fat Tack Holster, awesome company. Just some good old Tennessee boys. And then got my tourniquet here. And then also got fixed blade. This is the Bradford Guardian 3 with an aftermarket Kydex sheath and an ulti clip. It's my probably my go-to knife 9 times out of 10.
I like that blade.
Then I always, dude, it's awesome. It has that saber grind, super durable. It's actually in Magna Cut. So cool little story about this knife is that I dropped it in a puddle. Like during the springtime, I dropped it in the puddle with its old sheath. The old sheath was like this leather sheath and it lost retention and it was like an Apex carry sheath. Just the stock sheath that comes with the Bradford Guardian 3. And it slipped out, didn't know it till I got home. And then I find it 2 weeks later, still in the puddle. I come back to it and there's absolutely no rust on it at all. And that's cool. How cool that Magna Cut steel is. Yeah. In fact, I haven't even cleaned it since that moment. So yeah, that's always cool. Leatherman, I believe this is the Leatherman rebar. I always have a Leatherman on me. It's just like of all the tools that I have, I probably use my Leatherman more than I use a knife, to be honest. I don't even use the knife on a Leatherman unless I'm just trying to do something like that you shouldn't do with a knife with it.
Yeah, guilty. Also, I use my knife today, the back. You're going to get mad at me.
Oh, man.
I use the spine of it today to loosen some flathead screws. And I saw it bending, and I'm like, fine. I was like, I think I could do a little more. And luckily, it didn't break on me. We were on the phone when I was doing that. Yeah, we were on the phone when I was doing that. Sorry.
Oh, man. Anyway, so you guys will know, like, the knives we make in the future, you're going to know that they're super tough if they survive nobody. If they go through his torture test and they're fine, then, yeah, you know they're good to go. So if I'm working out on, you know, I do without giving my identity or anything like that, I use a pair of channel locks pretty often. This is just – usually they were the Knipex variety of, like, the pipe channel locks and stuff. Since then, I don't know what happened to them. After my first trip out to North Carolina, they just, like, disappeared on me. So I replaced them with, like, I think the channel lock brand of channel locks. They're nice and small. They're way better pliers than the Leatherman if I really need to crank down on something.
Sure.
What else do I have here? This is like a little Streamlight flashlight. Bam.
Ooh.
Has two different modes on there. There's like regular light and then like turbo light and stuff like that. It's pretty handy. And then one thing that's not on my person but always within arm's reach is, well, also my backpack where I keep extra mags, some spare cash, miscellaneous stuff. That I use day to day and stuff like that. And then as well as a notebook. If I don't write it down in the notebook for the day, then chances are I probably won't do it. So I just keep my brain on the outside of my body in the form of a notebook. some of you will like this. Got a cool little titanium pen. It's like, 4 inches long or something like that. It's the tactile turn bolt action titanium pen, which... You can also stab with if you need to. So, there's that option.
Dang.
And then, like, as far as, like, the fixed blades go, I love knives. Knives are freaking awesome to me. It's the most useful tool in the world. Like, everybody, every culture, everywhere in the world uses a knife. I tend to collect them. One of my favorites is the Spyderco PM2, and this one, I believe, is in crew wear.
Oh, nice.
It's an awesome, with the burlap micarta handles, compression lock. It's an awesome knife. As far as folding blades go, I like folding blades that have, like, the hands-free lock. Like, you don't have to put your hand in the way of the blade to lock it or to unlock it, and all, like, single-hand application. Like, this Manix 2 has that ball bearing lock, so you just pull that back and it'll close on you. Yeah, dude, I love knives. And then here's a cool little, pocket cleaver that I actually picked up at a festival by, a small time, bladesmith. It's cool. It's a little 1095 steel pocket cleaver. Fits perfectly in the hand, added a lanyard to it. came with a kydex sheath.
Yeah. I like that.
Knives. Knives are awesome.
I like that one a lot. I really like the Guardian. Cool. The Guardian 3 that you carry. I want to get one of those. Just because when you let me... Yeah. I think it was when we were killing chickens. I think you let me use it on one of them, if I remember correctly. And it's just a comfortable knife.
It's
and
so
we weren't killing chickens for fun, you guys. This is... We're going to eat them.
We're processing them. It would be wrong to eat them and not kill them first. So you got to kill them first.
I'll start at the feet.
But... But the blade on this Bradford Guardian 3, it's a saber grind. It's in Magna Cut. I got the flat scales on it instead of the contoured scales. I'm not a big fan of the contoured scales. It just seems a little bit too bulky for not like enough benefit from it. Like, it doesn't feel that much more comfortable. But another one that I really like, and you might like this one as well. If you like that Bradford Guardian 3, you might like this other one. It's the White River M1 Caper, knife. It's just
I was looking at that the other day. Literally, I was looking at that the other day because I think you'd mentioned it previously. Yeah. And
anybody interested? Like, a couple of awesome knife companies is White River for one. A guy that I keep running into is Exodus Knife and Tool. He makes one type of knife.
And
nobody keeps bringing it up to me because he's like, man, I love this knife.
I like what they do, man. I like it. I like the slim profile. Yeah. Like, I'm all about it. And when I meet this guy, he's not even going to know me, but I'm just going to give him a hug and say, well done, sir. Like, well done.
Yeah. Another one is Bradford. Bradford is awesome. Is an awesome knife company. Everybody I've mentioned so far is all USA made. Bradford also does I don't think they do any knives smaller than this one, the Bradford Guardian 3, but remembering their knives is pretty easy because it starts at 3, then it goes to 3.5, then it goes to 4, then it goes to 4.5, and each number is bigger. And they go all the way up to full blown fixed blade survival knives, all the way to like kitchen knives and stuff. Just an awesome, awesome company. Every once in a while, I'll find a Topps knife that I like. But the issue I have with, I don't have any issues with Topps, but the reason I don't, usually get Topps knives is because they tend to be, super overbuilt, and the thickness of the blade messes with the performance in my experience. Also, the coating, the Cerakote that they put on a lot of them, it feels like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Yeah, it's abrasive.
Yeah.
I do
Essie
like...
Essie is another one.
Yeah, I like some of the top smaller knives. I do.
Yeah. There's one that they made, the El Pionero. The story behind it was, ex-Sicario, which is, a cartel assassin guy. Redesigned the knife that he used to use for assassinations. I know, kind of dark and gory.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Oh, great.
But it was his grandmother's paring knife that he had adjusted and reground and stuff like that. Anyways, he ended up teaming up with Topps. They made one called the El Pionero, and it's just a thick paring knife. It's a super useful. The only thing I don't like about that knife is the clip that's on the kydex sheath. But just slap an Alti clip on it and it's better.
Yeah.
But that's a super useful knife. It's very comfortable in the hand, multiple grips. It's just a thick paring knife. It's nice and thin, so you can get into tight spaces and stuff like that. We talked a minute about knives, dude.
And that's good. I mean, I think this is a knife is probably a staple. That's a staple in your preparedness for any situation. And let's turn the conversation here, and we'll get into firearms too. But with knives, you know, if you buy a knife and you're carrying it, go use it, go test it out, go get comfortable with it. It's they're cool, they might look really pretty out of the box, but they're a tool, and tools are meant to be used. So, and I feel the same way about guns. Like, you know, people will like call me blasphemous in the firearms community if I were, you know, if they see me doing this, but like, they're tools, right? I'll take my rifle and throw it down onto some gravel. Like, it's going to survive. I want to make sure it's going to survive.
And you actually checked me on that. Whenever you were helping me get my AR set up, you were like, and I was trying to be like all gentle with it and delicate with it. And you're like, no, dude, like abuse it. It's a tool. Like, use it.
Yeah, and I'm not saying go out there and try to like pry open a door with, you know, with your barrel, but I'm just saying like, don't be over gentle with it to where like, you know, if there's a fail point somewhere on however you fitted it out, find out before you actually like depend on it, you know? And on top of that, like, it's a tool. If it gets scratched and stuff, good for it. It earned its beauty marks, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, people pay for a patina paint job or a Cerakote job on their rifles and stuff these days. And that drives me crazy sometimes because I'm like, just go use it. Put that patina on there. Yeah. You know, like.
Yeah. Go ahead and blew that barrel.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, too, like, so getting into using your equipment, like, you know, put it through its paces and like, and just be comfortable. I think I'm not like the best shooter ever. I'm not the, you know, I'm not some crazy instructor. I'm not some crazy spec ops guy, nothing like that. But just common sense wise, like, it's a tool that you're going to put in your hands that can do some serious things. Like, be comfortable with it and be responsible with it. Like,
yeah,
you know, most accidents happen because people are untrained and unlearned, even just on the functionality of the, you know, selector switch going from safe to fire. And then like, if you're carrying too, like I carry that 43X every day, you know, but like I got a bigger Glock on my, you know, for my, I don't know how to phrase this, I guess on my kit, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's the same. It's the same angles on my grips, you know, it's the same draw. I'm getting the same sight pictures. It's different in size, sure, but I'm not going from like the angle on an XD to a Glock. Like, that would throw off everything. It throws off your draw, your sight picture. So find a platform and stay with it, you know, like, get really good at it. I like a bunch of guns too. I love to shoot them, but if I'm going to train, I'm going to train with the ones I'm going to, you know, potentially have to use. So
I'm going to train with a revolver, but carry a Glock 19.
Bro, but I'll tell you what, how boss would that be? You pull out some, you know, some cowboy gun and you're like, all right, like, you set up a full on like duel, you know, like someone's trying to rob me. You're like, come on, I challenge you, you know?
Take your glove off. Slap. I challenge you to a duel.
So now I gotta wear gloves too. All right, I'll just keep one in my back pocket. Man.
Oh man. And okay, so this is gonna get some flack from some people, but do not go to the gas station and buy just the cheapest knife you can find. Like, you can get so much more performance by just going to a reputable manufacturer and spending like, I mean, dude, you can get a really, really good pocket knife for like $40.
Sure.
Like, you don't have to spend hundreds of dollars. You don't have to spend even $100 to get like a good, reliable knife. You can get a good, reliable knife for like $40. And there's plenty of YouTube. Like, you'll see it on YouTube all the time, these knife reviewers. Somebody will review like even like this Spyderco Mannix too.
Yeah.
It's an awesome, awesome knife. But you don't have to have something like this that is in this particular knife steel, or that particular price or that particular lock or anything like that to have something that's really, really good and really reliable. But there's always somebody in the comments like, oh, the pocket knife I bought at the gas station is sharper than that. First of all,
they ain't used it yet.
And there it's only sharp for right this second. Yeah. It's sharp until you use it. And then, yeah. But a skill you might want to learn is how to sharpen knives. It's something that not enough people know how to do, but everybody uses knives. How many people have dull kitchen knives right now? Dull knife is a more dangerous knife when you're using it up close and like with your hands and stuff like that. You have to use more pressure. Yeah, it just becomes a little hectic and a little crazy when it's dull. So just learn how to sharpen knives. It's not difficult. You don't need expensive equipment or anything like that. You can get like a $15 whetstone off of Amazon right now. And like a scrap piece of leather or even your belt. If you have a leather belt, put some honing compound on the backside of it and just use that to maintain your knives. And you'd be amazed at how long you can maintain a knife just by stropping it at the end of every day and not having to resharpen it.
Yeah.
That's not going to work so well if you get some of these crazy super steels, but I would say 70% of the knives out there, that's going to be more than adequate to put a good working edge back on your knife.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? You bring up a good point, right? Like the maintenance required on some of this equipment. Like, clean your guns, you know? Yeah. Sharpen your knives. You know, do maintenance on your generators. Do maintenance on your radios. Charge your batteries. Just these simple things where when, you know, if something happens, it's not like someone's going to give you a 30-minute heads up. Like, something's just going to happen. And
be the ant or the honeybee.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't know how to do any of these things, guess what? Like, you got YouTube University right now. While we still have it, while internet's up, like, take advantage of it. You know, there's videos on all of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Now, the only time I would say don't trust YouTube is when it comes to foraging. When it comes to wild foraging. That's something. Like, when it comes to plants, you're generally going to be okay if you're in the United States. But that's something where I would try to find a mentor for. Like, somebody who's going to go out there with you. He's going to show you, or she is going to show you what you can eat, what characteristics to look for, and stuff like that. Like, take the approach the Secret Service does with counterfeit money. They just know what a real US dollar looks like. And if it doesn't look like this, then they know it's fake. Same thing with dandelions. Dandelion is a big one. There's a lot of people who look at a plant and call that a dandelion, and it's not. Like, dandelions aren't as common as a lot of people think. A lot of people will confuse like broadleaf plantain with a dandelion.
Really?
And those are two, those are two plants that if you live in North America, those are two plants that you should definitely become acquainted with. If nothing else, like, they just make your salads better. Like, broadleaf plantain, early spring, dude, it tastes like butter.
Really?
Like, it literally tastes like butter. Yeah. There's this one weed called smartweed. Has the same, it's like these purple little seeds almost. They're not going to provide much in the way of nutrition, but they have the same cognitive benefits that ginkgo biloba does, or biloab. Ginkgo biloab, maybe? Balboa. It's that Japanese, looks like a cat paw leaf.
Okay.
Same cognitive benefits as that does, that smart weed. And it's like, if you're making a salad, it's a nice little crunch, like little baby croutons in your salad.
Yeah. I like that.
And then, back to like what we were talking about before, when it comes to food preps and stuff, something that let's say somebody asks me like, hey, I know you're into preparedness. I'm now convinced that we need to prepare. Like, I need to get my family prepared. Where should I start? I would say, as far as food preps go, I would say get at least 6 months of food put back for each person that you're preparing for. The reason I say 6 months is because in North America, worst case scenario, that's how long you're going to have to wait for your very first radish harvest. If you plan on like growing food to sustain yourself afterwards, like worst case scenario, you're going to have to wait 6 months before your first radish harvest in North America. And the reason radishes is because they take about 30 days to grow out. And that's one of the fastest growing vegetables you could put in a garden is a radish. And then have multiple ways to like cook your food. Like, okay, let's say you're putting back like a bunch of flour for your 6 month preps and stuff. Like, do you have a way to bake bread? Like, do you sure. have like everything else you need to make that flour edible? So maybe think like, okay, is freeze-dried food the way to go? It's expensive, but it's super lightweight, and all you need is water. Just a bunch of different options. Like, okay, let's say you have 6 months of food put back in your freezers. Well, like, what if the power goes out? Do you have a way to keep that freezer going, or is all that meat or that all that food going to go bad? Canned goods are awesome, but they're heavy. If you have to leave, you're going to have to haul canned goods. So a variety of prepared food is a good idea. Yeah. And like, as far as water, have multiple ways to procure water, like have ways to catch water, like rainwater, have ways to filter water, have ways to purify water, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those life straws are great, but they're temporary. That, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So setting up filtration systems, learning how to build them is fine. Or even having like, you know, if you don't want to go through that, just, you know, buy some others. I still recommend learning how to do it. But yeah, just, this is one of those things. It's like, you don't really know what's ahead of you, whether it be a localized, like a regional disaster, whether it be a event that happens while you're just out and about in society, like what we just witnessed happen, you know, on January 1st, you know, and that's just the start from my opinion, you know, and whatever you think that is, the fact of the matter is people still lost their lives and were hurt. Yeah, you just never know, you know what I mean? And that's another thing. It's like, well, you know, maybe this isn't the best year to be, you know, in the bars where you're out and intoxicated and, you know, not having your wits about you. Maybe you just suck it up and stop drinking, you know?
Okay, so let's say you are having strong drink and you're being merry. Do it at home.
Yeah.
Do it at a friend's house. don't go out in public.
Yeah, it's like, it's not about being afraid to go out and do things. It's about using wisdom and just not placing yourself in positions where something could happen that you just would Absolutely. Rather not deal with, you know?
Yeah.
But this also gets into, you know, what do you carry on your person? Like carrying a tourniquet on you, I guarantee you, like it, one of those victims from the January 1st event in New Orleans, like, could have benefited from somebody having a tourniquet on their person right there. You know, someone who knows how to use it. It's just be a force multiplier, you know, don't be someone who takes away from, you know, just doing good to others, you know, protecting yourself, your family, your friends, and just even the stranger. I mean, that's good Torah to be a protector and to help, you know?
Right.
It's good following the instructions.
Oh, something else you should put back as far as like food preps is salt.
Yeah.
Just makes everything taste better. Like, yeah, it's already sure crappy. Does. You're already going through a disaster. You might as well have good taste in food.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You ever try to eat beef with no salt? Kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I love beef. I'll still, yeah, but I agree. I like my seasoning on it.
I'll figure it out. but it'd be better with salt.
I'll break a sweat and rub my arm on that steak before I cook it and get some salt on there.
That's nasty.
Yeah, that is pretty nasty.
Slap some steaks on your chest and then go on a ruck march and come back. Do what the Mongolians did, put the meat underneath their saddle.
Yeah, maybe not. You know, maybe not. But here's an idea too, like fishing. Fishing's a great source of getting protein. Obviously, depending on where you're at, but most places you could probably get to some form of water that has some fish in it. Just make sure it's got fins and scales. But
Yeah. And if it doesn't, chop it up and use it as bait for the next fish.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. You can buy some cheap, like the telescoping fishing poles. It'll fit in a pack. You know, you can just have some fishing line and some hooks and, you know, tied to a stick. I've caught fish that way. It's a little harder, but it can be done. You know, I do have a cool fishing spear, a spearhead that could be affixed to like a random stick or something that I've never tried. I want to get out and try.
Dude, that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
That'd be so cool. Like one of those frog gigging sticks.
Yeah, it's so similar. Yeah. It's probably the same design, but, Yeah, I really want to spear fish and then eat it right there on the bank of the water and just be a man, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like Smeagol? Is that what you're talking about? We likes it fresh and wriggling.
Well, oh, yeah, man. I guess there's that thought now. If we're ever out camping or fishing along the creek, then yeah. So here's another point. Don't make the people that you plan to prepare with and survive with, don't make them uncomfortable by Smeagol jokes, you know? Like, let's no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, don't be crawling around on all fours at night.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of that demonic stuff happening soon enough, man.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, so check it out, everybody. Hey, 2025 is going to be a mess. And then going forward, like, right after the elections, everybody sat back in the recliners and they're like, oh, we're good. We're safe. The world's going to be better. I could take a breath now. Nope. You should prepare more now than ever. Listen to the stuff coming out. If you don't think that, like, that hearing things like we're going to take Canada and Greenland with military pressure if necessary, like, what? Like, I get that there's reasons and purposes behind why these things are being said, but, like, buckle up, you know, because this is going to be interesting. Yeah. This whole thing using the military to grab, you know, undocumented immigrants and take them out. This is something that we've never seen before, right? And it's only going to take one or two instances to have this turn into a very, like, turn the U.S. into a police state, even more so, like, out in the open, not how it is behind, you know, closed doors now, but, you know, it's going to affect the average citizen. It will. Like, I don't see any way that it wouldn't. Not to mention the groups.
I know nobody knows what we look like or anything like that, but you and I are suspects. Once they start deporting the illegals,
sure.
You know you and I are getting stopped at some point.
Sure. They're going to show up and I'll be like, donde está el gatos pantalones?
What? Cat pants?
Yeah, where are the cat's pants?
We're like, officer, I don't speak I took 3 years of Spanish in high school and I don't speak a lick of Spanish.
Dude, it's you know, like, okay, so you look at it like this. You have like some major groups that have a huge foothold, cartels, gangs, stuff like that, and these are functioning groups that have certain capabilities that we're not crediting them with. And I'm just speaking from the lenses of the average citizen. I'm not talking about our government agencies and everything. I know that they run, you know, they know what's up, apparently. All these people from China, right? Mainly military aged males. No one can leave China. You can't go be a student in another country unless you've served time in the PLA first. Like, you have to be trained and indoctrinated first. And then you have at the southern border, you have like where there's like markings in Chinese to guide people to different checkpoints. And there's proof of like these chickens that have had their throats cut, and which this is a practice by the Chinese army. Like, when they get to the nation that they're going to war with, they have this ritual where they cut a chicken's throat and they drink the blood, You know, I don't know. It's just crazy stuff, but it's here. Like, hey, hello. So we have that group. And then you have, like, you know, what would be classified as T cells. I don't want to say the full word on here, but, you know, go with me, everybody here. You know, we just fought the 20-year war on T, that word, you know?
Right.
So all these different groups, and who knows who's banded together, you know, who's going to be working one with another, but these are all formidable groups that if we're like putting the military presence out there to start dealing with these, there's going to be pushback, and this is going to overflow and affect the average citizen. I don't know to what degree, I don't know what it's going to look like. Like, I'm not claiming to perfectly understand the future, but if I'm reading the writing on the walls, like, just buckle up, buttercup. Like, this is going to get interesting. Not to mention all the scriptural prophecy that's being kind of checked off in a quick manner, but that's a discussion for another day.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, just guys. Oh, you were speaking earlier about, like, the election happened. So I grew up in the preparedness community. My parents were preparedness minded. We did campouts, all that type of stuff with groups and stuff like that. And I remember when Obama was president, there were a ton of people coming to the campouts, ton of people. And then Obama got out, and then all of a sudden, everybody is back in the matrix. Everybody quit preparing. Everybody was like, oh, we're safe now. Like, we have a Republican in office. We don't have anything to worry about. And then Biden got elected. And then everybody started preparing again. Everybody's like, oh, man. Every time there's a Republican in office, everybody stops preparing. Every time there's a Democrat in office, everybody starts preparing again. It's like they think that whoever is in office is going to be the savior from whatever bad could happen. Don't view it like that. Like, left, right, red, blue, whoever's in office, just treat. They're all on the same team. It's like, do you want spit or do you want lube? That's what the question is. Like, just keep preparing. Despite whoever's in office, just keep preparing.
It's basically like two sides of the same coin. You put it in the same machine and you get the same crappy product, you know? If we are to believe that scripture is accurate, which I firmly do with all of my being, we know that there is little to no evidence of any sort of righteous government at these days now. Before the Messiah returns. In fact, even what's seen as a potential peacemaking government, if it should so come to be, like, will be a deception. You know, like, we know the Messiah comes back. What? He doesn't come back to bring peace right away. He comes back with a vesture dipped in blood. You know, this is the way it is. And it's not about if you just confessed a name or not. It's, are you keeping his ways? Are you truly walking after him? Do you know him? Does he know you? You know?
Yeah.
That's the biggest place of preparedness we need to be. And then physically preparing comes secondary to that.
And this isn't anything like the disasters and the, what could happen from man isn't what you should be fearful of. Like, of everything we discussed this episode, like, the only thing that I was fearful of was, does he know me? Like, has got to be the scariest verse in the entire Bible. It was, depart from me, I never knew you. Yeah. Like, you did all these works in my name. Depart from me, I never knew you.
Let's, like, hit that real quick. Let's hit it real quick. Let's finish off in that. Yeah. Matthew 7.
I'm about to pee my pants. Not because I have to pee, just from fear.
Yeah, I kind of got to pee. Let's get through this so I can run to the bathroom. All right. Starting in Matthew 7, verse 15. Okay, so this, we're going to read this in succession here. It says, But be aware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are savage wolves. By their fruits you shall know them. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every good tree yields good fruit, but a rotten tree yields wicked fruit. A good tree is unable to yield wicked fruit, and a rotten tree to yield good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then, by their fruits you shall know them. Okay, he says this amazing thing here, which can be summed up by Psalm 1. You want to know what producing good fruit is? Let's hit it real quick. Psalm 1 says, "Blessed is the man who shall not walk in the counsel of the wrong, and shall not stand in the path of sinners, and shall not sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the Torah of Yahuwah, and he meditates in his Torah day and night. For he shall be as a tree planted by the rivers of water that yields its fruit in its season, and whose leaf does not wither, and whatever he does prospers. The wrong or the wicked are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind blows away. Therefore the wrong shall not rise in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For Yahuwah knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wrong comes to naught." So the Messiah gives us this awesome thing right there in Matthew, and he's definitely speaking on terms of Psalm 1 and just in general what it means to produce fruit. So right after this, he goes on to say, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Master, Master,' shall enter into the reign of the heavens, but he who is doing the desire of my Father in the heavens. Many shall say to me in that day, 'Master, Master, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many mighty works in your name?' And then I shall declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who work lawlessness.'" So the word there for lawlessness is anomia. Anomia. And it's illegality. That is a violation of the law, wickedness, iniquity, to transgress or transgression of the law, unrighteousness. Okay. And right before we see, "Master, Master, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many mighty works in your name?" These are all believers. The ones that were not allowed in still believed in him. Yeah, I don't see atheists and Satanists going out there doing things in the name of the Messiah, casting out demons, doing mighty works. These are believers. Yeah. They were rejected for working lawlessness. So,
and it also says that they were successful in doing those things. They were casting out demons. They were doing great works.
Sure.
They were performing miracles and stuff like that. And I think that's something I need to pay attention to is like, okay, they are able to do these things, but if they're still not following the law, I mean, not necessarily something I need to pay attention to.
I hear what you're saying. I think we all do. I mean,
yeah. It's like that's not necessarily a fruit to look at if you're trying to determine whether it's they're producing good fruits or bad fruits. Yeah, it is interesting for sure.
Yep. And so where did it go? I was trying to pull something up, but but I lost it. Sorry, everybody.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
The sum of our belief, right? And I'm totally paraphrasing this because my brain stopped working here. But fear Elohim and keep his commands. This is like our whole purpose, you know? And this is what the Messiah said the whole time. Like, if you love me, keep my commands. And he's also said, "I come to only do what the Father has instructed me to do." We know the Father never changes. And then we go back and see the Father's instructions. Like, it's beautiful. It's awesome. The whole Bible from beginning to end makes sense together.
It does. Absolutely. And on that cheerful note, if you would like to sign up to give your testimony on the podcast, Then send us an email at exiledstrangers@proton.me. That's exiledstrangers@proton.me. Remember, we will keep you anonymous. And yeah, so that way you feel comfortable giving your full testimony. And remember, this podcast, the testimony, the biblical deep dives and all that is not about anybody involved. It is about Yahuwah and his son and the word. Yep. You got anything to add?
No. I would just, well, I guess I should have said yes, not no. we just touched on some things just to provoke some thought as far as physical prepping. And right. I would say definitely like search these out further. There's a lot of cool preparedness groups that actually like have festivals and meet in person. A lot of really awesome people who are just willing to share the knowledge that they've gained over years and years of practice and study. So yeah, make good relationships and learn, you know, be a team. But that's it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
All right. Adios.